Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name's Jack Farmer, his name's Andy Rossi, and this is the Evolution of Movie Show, the show where we chat about movies. But before we get started, Andy Rossi, how you doing, fella?
Oh, I didn't even know you were going to ask that. Let's see. I'm good. I'd say B+.
You know, that's pretty good. That's pretty darn good, all things considered. But I think I know how I can get you to an A. I can get you to an A.
Get out of here.
And it's because we have a special guest today, someone who you know very well. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a round of applause wherever you're sitting. If you're driving, pull over and give a round of applause. It's Tim Kelly. Tim, how are you, fella?
Thank you. I'm doing good. Very well. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I am happy to have you on. I'm happy to chat about some movies. I'll talk about the movie in a second, but let's chat about what this show is for anyone who's new to the show. It's the Evolution of Movies show, and how it works is we watch a movie and then we talk about it like it's a book club, but we call it the Evolution of Movies because we always pick a movie that came out 1 year after the last movie we talked about. So started in 1980, which is 1981, 1982. Now we're all the way up to 2012. I can't believe it.
Wow.
Back in a time when movie theaters had hits like Lincoln, Zero Dark Thirty, and of course, Men in Black 3. But aren't talking about those. We're talking about Silver Linings Playbook, a movie IMDb describes as, after a stint in a mental institution, former teacher Pat Salitano moves back in with his parents and tries to reconcile with his ex-wife. Things get more challenging when Pat meets Tiffany, a mysterious girl with problems of her own. Tim, have you seen this movie before, and what were your thoughts going into it this time around?
I was really excited to rewatch this movie. I'd seen it once before, and that's far too few times. I'm a big, big fan of David O. Russell. His films Three Kings and I Heart Huckabees mean a lot to me, so that's one of the main reasons why I really wanted to get on this review here. But yeah, I'd only seen this film once in theaters, really connected to it though. It was my introduction to Jennifer Lawrence, which was a little confusing at the time because it was like she was fresh off the Hunger Games and was like, is this a teenager? Is she dating Bradley Cooper? I'm a little confused at who this new actress is that's just been hurled in front of my face. But the movie is just A+. There's nuance to it. It's a beautiful exploration of mental illness, many different layers and types of mental illness, and performances, just amazing, amazing performances from Robert De Niro. I think he gives one of his best later performances in his career. He's definitely not phoning it in on this one, and I just love everything about this movie.
I don't know. Meet the Fockers was pretty good. But Andy, Tim talked about this being such a great movie, but yeah. I think it's time for us to have the game. And the game is guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. Tim, what we do here is Andy's going to try to guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. You're going to try to guess if the actual score is higher or lower than what Andy picks. Andy, what do you think Silver Linings Playbook came in at?
Well, not to brag, but I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, he's just not that into you. I got it right on the nose.
You did.
So I'm feeling pretty hot, feeling pretty frisky. but I think last Cabin in the Woods, I did terrible. So let me see. This movie is great, like Tim said. Amazing performances. The critics loved it. Critics tend to love David O. Russell. I'm going to go, let's go 85.
85, pretty high score there, Tim, but you sound like a pretty big fan. Do you think that 85 is high enough, or should it be higher or lower, or where do you think critics have it?
Well, I knew this was coming, so I purposefully did not look at the Rotten Tomatoes to keep this.
Thank you.
Let's see. My
Tim's
first guess, though,
exact
I literally thought 85 before he said it. So I'm just going to go one higher because I love this movie. I'm going to say it was 86.
86. Rotten Tomatoes has it sitting at 92%.
Ooh,
putting
nice.
It in that very upper echelon of movies that we've seen. I have never seen this movie before, at least before viewing. And
yeah, wait, you still haven't?
I just read the Wikipedia. I don't actually
watch it
know.
After the show.
Depends what you guys say. If it sounds good, I'll watch it. No, but I actually didn't really know what it was going into it either. I didn't really know what to expect. I had seen trailers for it, but those came out 10 years ago. So I didn't really remember exactly what it was. I think I remember that it had something to do with mental illness, but I didn't really know. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. And I enjoyed it quite a bit, even though it wasn't a silly superhero movie, which is Spider-Man wasn't that I like. So I thought that was actually pretty cool. It did feel like a movie based on a book where it felt like there was a lot of information left out and also a lot of things that you could tell probably had more life than what the movie showed. But I think that I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie. I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed the kind of journey we go through. I don't know if it's a movie I'd watch 100 times just because it's a dense movie. Yeah. If that makes sense. But I went into it kind of going, I don't know if I'm going to be into this one, but I was like, oh, this is actually a good movie. I was into it. So
did I pick? I picked this one.
Yes.
And it was in the 90s.
It was in yes.
Oh, okay. Just but we're keeping score at home.
Are you trying to compare? Are you trying to compare your picks to my picks of Kroll?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Don't be elitist, Andy.
Scorpion King. Scorpion King.
That's
Empire
what,
Records.
I'm sure people who listen to this, where does Jack get off? This is an okay movie. It was no Scorpion King, but well. Speaking of people who are listening, I want to take a quick second to thank everyone who is listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or watching on YouTube or listening on YouTube. Like, comment, share, subscribe. It's how we pay our bills, is with your likes. So without a like, we're going to be homeless.
Yeah.
It's all on you now. let's get into this movie, though. We start at the Carroll Psychiatric Facility in Baltimore, and we're talking about Sundays being the best day and true love, all while someone is banging on the door saying it's time to go. Against doctor's orders, Pat's mom takes him from the facility along with their friend Danny, who has to actually be taken back to the facility. But once home, we meet Pat's dad, who is an unemployed bookie who thinks Pat should leave his ex-wife alone, but Pat will not be deterred. Tim, tell us about the characters of this movie and the world that they live in.
Well, I love that that it takes place in Philadelphia. So that's one thing that's it's beautifully accurate to how just perfectly they represent the area and the characters therein. But I love that they start the film at a mental institution. And the way we're introduced to characters in this movie, it's very much a David O. Russell-ism, but it's almost like we're overhearing an interaction, like we're eavesdropping on characters when we get to know them. I love that about his style, and the way we get to know these characters here is that we feel like we're experiencing the slice of life, that we're just a fly on the wall in the room with them interacting. And then through that, we get to really get a sense of who they are, what they're about, and what they want.
Some of the stuff I really loved about this right off the bat, Andy, is how you understand immediately that Pat is a little overbearing. He's a little much. You understand that the dad is skeptical and going to be a little tough to deal with for certain things. Danny already is funny, even if you don't know anything about the person playing. I mean, I get that this guy is kind of a character. Mm-hmm. You kind of get the feeling right off the bat that everyone in this movie is going to have quite a bit of character to them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the characters are amazing in this. And the things that they bring up in the beginning, they kind of keep it around throughout the whole film, which is cool. It's not like you said, or you've said in other podcasts, when you have something, you know, the callback. Yeah. Sometimes things get mentioned and they don't get mentioned again. Right off the bat, Excelsior gets mentioned right away. And then just with De Niro's character, he's all in on the Eagles. So the whole movie is so much about the Philadelphia Eagles. And I just have to say, in case anybody doesn't know, Tim Kelly is from Philly. So if you think it's an authentic version of Philadelphia, I feel like, they did it right.
That's right. Yeah. I went to college at Temple University, and there I became an Eagles fan. It's infectious because of just how embedded into the culture it truly is. When the Eagles are playing, the whole city stops and we all rally behind the team. Same with the Phillies. It's just a really – I mean, you got to know, Andy, being from Chicago, there's a few cities that are kind of like that where they really rally behind their teams. It's usually underdog teams, but the city just loves them and will never quit.
Yeah,
that's Philly through and through. Exactly. Luckily, we've had a few good years recently.
Especially the film like depicts. I think the Phillies win the World Series that season, and the Eagles like have a pretty good season. So nice year to be in Philadelphia.
Was there realism to the scores and stuff? Not to jump ahead, yes. But they do kind of go through.
I looked it up.
Those were accurate scores.
I brought up the 2008 schedule, and it's like exactly right. So you could kind of be like, I know, you know, he's going to win that bet, or I know he's going to lose that one.
Okay, well, in that case, I'll let it slide. I was a little upset they had my Seahawks losing.
Really happened.
But if they lost, then there's not really much they can do there.
Yeah.
I will say, though, now it's based off a book, so I give this a little bit of leeway with certain things. Like there were some things though where they're like talking about the necklace he wears. It was kind of an issue, but it did never really amount to anything in the movie. Now I understand when it's a book, I say I give it leeway because I'm sure in the book that was an important part and they needed to put that in the movie. But I feel like that's one of the pros and cons of a book movie where you're like, well, there's some stuff that like it's like I said at the beginning, I feel like there was more life to certain things than what they probably had time for in the movie, because they gave a lot of life to things. I don't mean to sound like they were doing things willy nilly, but there were things where I was like even Danny, the character that keeps breaking out of the thing. I bet there was more to that character in the book than in the movie, but the movie was 2 hours. What more can you ask for?
Yeah. I didn't know this was a book.
Yeah. It said at the end, it was a book. But even as I was watching, like, this feels like a book the way it's kind of playing out.
I love too the line with them. I love the mom, Jackie Weaver. She's so great in this. But when he calls his dad out for being like a bookie that lost his job, she's like, I just told you. She's like, no, I didn't say that. And then he's like, no, you just said don't say anything, but dad lost his job. I love it. The writing in this is so good. But stuff like that where he's just like, no, you just said don't say anything. It's like, well,
and that's watching this as we talk about mental illness was kind of cool about that is when that happens in that scene, you're like, what an idiot. Why did he say it then? But then as the movie goes on, you're like, oh, it's not his fault. It's it's what the issues he's dealing with that is causing him to do that. And because of the other character's problems, it almost makes it stand out like why they have their own unique ways of acting. But we'll talk about that in a second because we got a few more characters to bring in.
Yeah.
Pat is reading all of the books on his ex-wife's syllabus, but throws one of them out the window when it ends negatively. Pat's mom forces him to go to therapy the next morning, where we find out that his old wedding song will set him off. He explains the reason why is because he caught his wife cheating on him while the song was playing and he beat the guy up. Back home, Pat doesn't want to take his meds, but watches the Eagles game with his dad, who has a lot of superstitions. Pat eventually leaves for a jog and sees some people from his past life and gets invited to dinner. That night, his parole officer reminds him that he has a restraining order against him and cannot go see the people that he was seeing. Andy, this is where what I like about this, we talk about certain characters, other characters having issues. I like how even the dad has some issues that he's going through. Now it's superstitious as they mask it as superstition, but as Pat says, it's also like an OCD issue as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I think those little like once you start seeing everyone has issues, you start to almost understand the issues in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Tim said earlier, like De Niro in this performance is so good. I just love just watching him, just his facial expressions, just the way he's touching the clickers. He's got this little handkerchief. Like it's all just so the characters in this movie are so perfect, just the way that each have their nuances. Like even the mom with what does she call? I know I wrote it somewhere about her sandwiches or whatever. What does she call them? Krabby snacks and homemades. Like, what does that mean? But she says that throughout the movie.
It sounds delicious, though.
Sounds amazing. But yeah. all these little things from each character. So like the De Niro stuff was, I loved it. Yeah, so good.
And Tim, as a, what I liked about this, so it was very subtle and small too, is as Pat is talking to the doctor, he explains how he sees his wife and he attacks the guy. And I remember thinking, like, it's a little unfair. He has to go to a mental institution. Like, someone was in his house and like with his wife. Like, I feel like maybe that's a little unfair that he has to go away because of that. But at the same time, then he mentioned that there was also, he's having issues with delusion and calling the police on his wife and stuff like that. And we're starting to see that these issues with Pat are more than just quirks. Like, they can be kind of dangerous.
Yeah, he's literally dangerous. He attacked his wife's lover and beat him pretty badly, from what I think they imply. So much so that the cops are just on him throughout the whole film. And I love that aspect of it, too, how there's this one police officer who's just constantly, you know, around every corner, just ready to show up and be like, hey, what are you doing? You're about to get thrown back in a loony bin, and I'm about to throw you there. Like, it's I love the small town feel of it. Everything felt super lived in, and just love the whole thing.
I with the cop, there was a point where eventually I was like, is he the only cop in Philadelphia? Right. It's the same guy everywhere he goes.
He's such a good actor too. He's in Ray Donovan as one of the sons of John Voight. The My Cherie Amour song. I was kind of thinking the therapist, that was kind of mean, like to just set him up like that.
It was a test.
That he just like destroyed his office.
You know, now that you mention it too, like if I was the secretary, I'd be like, wait, you wanted to see if a guy was going to violently snap while he was talking to me?
Yeah.
Maybe you should have given me a heads up on that or had someone else sitting here, because I didn't, if I was the receptionist, I'm like, that's not cool to be like, this guy who went away for 8 months because he violently attacked someone and a song sets him off. I'm just going to play it while he's talking to you. Let's see what he does.
How cool is the therapist, though, by the way? He's so great. Yeah. Just, again, another character that when he comes, we'll talk about him later when we see him at the football game. But
yeah,
he's great.
He was great. There was a scene that, this is one of those scenes that I wrote down as, did this matter? And then as I look back on it, I think it does. When Pat's about to go for a jog, and the dad's like, before you can jog, you got to fix the window. And then the mom's like, before you can fix the window, you got to go to therapy. He's like, but I don't want to go to therapy. And I was thinking, he never fixes the window. It's kind of a, not necessarily an important scene, but looking back on it, and as I go through the notes, I think how important it is, because it shows how all these different people are almost struggling with their relationships with each other, because they all want and need different things and they're not getting it. And it's not like there's still love there, but there's like a tension there. Like, dude, fix the window. Dude, go to your therapy. I got to go for a jog. I'm trying to get in shape. Like, and it's very easy to look over that scene and be like, you don't need that scene. But I also think that the family tension, it was important to build there. I don't know if there's anything to take away from that, but just that was a note I had.
Well, even De Niro's character wants to go take a run with him, right? Like he wants to be around him, and you know, but I don't think he knows really how to. And I love the idea of the garbage bag, by the way.
Yeah,
this is so funny. Just such a, like a nice addition to his character.
And the reasoning why, I mean, he mentions early on, I think that his ex told him that she thought he was fat. So he's got this like body dysmorphia that he carries through. It's just another layer of the mental illness that he's experiencing. Not to mention it's metaphorical. It symbolizes his self-worth. He's literally wearing a garbage bag. He sees himself as a garbage person at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. I love that. I love that comment there, sees himself as garbage. That's a fantastic observation there.
Just in regard to what you said before we go on, I love that he has to go to therapy before he fixes the window. I feel like that's symbolic too, of just, you know, one foot in front of the other, like that he has to get his personal mindset in order, and then he needs to fix, you know, all the trouble that he's brewed, you know, in the outside world, you know, but he can't really do that. He can't fix the external stuff until he fixes the internal stuff.
It's the airplane thing. You got to put the mask on yourself before you can put the mask on someone next to you. So, speaking of going to the doctor, though, Pat's doctor tells him he needs to understand that his ex may not take him back, which for some reason hit me really hard, too. Like, God, that has to be devastating to hear. But no matter how fit he gets, she might not take him back. And Pat goes to the dinner he was invited to, dressed in the wrong outfit. And Pat's friend tells him that he feels like he's suffocating. Then Tiffany comes over and they have some very uncomfortable conversations about her dead husband. Eventually, Pat and Tiffany connect over prescriptions they've been given while acknowledging they're both a little bad with social situations walking home. Tiffany invites Pat inside, but he says he's married and she's not because her husband is dead. Tiffany slaps Pat and sends him home, where Pat freaks out because and causes a scene because he can't find his wedding video until the police show up. Tim, this is kind of the part of the movie where it's no longer quirks and it's kind of like, this is dangerous. This is bad. It's not this guy. It just has no filter. It's that this guy is unhinged.
Yeah. Well, it starts off funny enough. I mean, he shows up to the dinner in, you said the wrong outfit. It was literally an Eagles jersey at a nice dinner. He almost doesn't go into the home because he realizes how ridiculous he looks. But then it gets a little bit more serious. They're all of their issues kind of come to the surface at that table, and the conflict that's sort of, you know, buried underneath the surface with Jennifer Lawrence's character and him, that their issues kind of just, you know, come to the forefront then. And they're not able to really ignore it. And then I love how confrontational she is later on, and how just up front and forward she is. She's clearly dealing with some trauma and dealing with that by possibly, I guess we learned that she's sleeping around a little bit. Maybe she has a sex addiction issue. And the confluence of those two things, these two, you know, damaged individuals meeting and colliding with each other that night, it's just really funny. I don't know. It's funny and it's touching and it's sad at the same time. It's all these things.
It felt almost to me, and Andy, I want to send this to you, that Pat being confronted by someone who is just as upfront as he is and just as abrasive as he is, almost like woke him up to, is this how it feels to be with me when someone acts like this? And because she was the first person that made him stop. Like when his mom was like, hey, I told you not to say that. No, yeah, you said this. But when Tiffany is like blunt with him, he's like, whoa, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. Like, I almost feel like that was like the mirror that showed him who he was.
This is my favorite scene of the movie because there's just so much going on. And, you know, in every like romantic comedy, they have like the meet cute. This is like a meet ugly, I guess, because they're just like, you know, they got so much stuff going on with them too. I love Ronnie is the friend, because you think he's got it all together, you know, and then he leans in and he's just like, she's suffocating. The way he's doing like the whole suffocating, he puts his hands over his face. It's just so funny because you just see, like, you know, Bradley Cooper just comes out of a treatment center, and then you see Ronnie with the nice house and, you know, the good looking wife or whatever, and then like, but no, deep down he's unhappy too, and he's got a lot of stuff he's trying to like stay afloat in his business. So I like seeing his character. And then Jennifer Lawrence is so good at this movie, and when she the way she's just going back and forth with Bradley Cooper, so good. And then she stand up, she's like, I'm tired, I want to go home. And then I think that was like Bradley Cooper was
I wish we all could do that when we were ready to go, by the way.
That's kind of both those characters' superpower, though. It's like cutting through the BS and just saying what's on their mind with no filter. Like, that's what makes them perfect foils for each other.
Yeah. And I like this scene, too. I wrote this down. He said, Bradley Cooper's character says, they won't give me a phone because they think I'll call Nikki. And then I think the friend goes, that's too bad. Or somebody goes, no, I would call her. Like, kind of like, no, yeah, they have a point.
Yeah, it's fair. I will say, Andy, I'm very upset with you, and I disagree with you wholly about saying anything about Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper being ugly.
Oh, no, they're beautiful.
I mean, come
people.
On. I don't care how awkward the conversation was. That's still a meet cute. I don't care. I don't care who, what they said.
And doesn't Bradley Cooper, remember I mentioned on the, he's just not that into you. Like Bradley Cooper, like whatever, 5 years before this, had the blonde hair with the highlights and stuff. And you're just a douchebag. In this one, he was more like, you definitely like, I don't know. I really was, you know, hopeful for him and like rooting for him and wanting him to get better and wanting him to be with Jennifer Lawrence, you know, later on, where like that other movie, you were just like, the guy's such a douche. So this, to me, it just really showed like how good of an actor he is.
Was this his first serious movie? Like where he, like, he was really like showing the acting chops?
I feel like it was. Yeah. Cause it was like, Old School, or I'm sorry, Wedding Crashers. And like, he's just not that into you.
I think Limitless might have been before this. I think maybe.
Yeah, that maybe. Sounds right.
Might have been the year before.
But I know when he did this movie, I think it was like everyone was kind of like, oh, shoot. You know, kind of like when McConaughey was in, I forget the name of that movie off the top of my head.
Sahara?
Was it How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Fool's Gold.
Yeah, Fool's Gold. Yeah, when he was in Fool's Gold.
Next year, we're doing all Matthew McConaughey movies for this, by the way.
He just gets shirtless and it's charming.
I wanted to call out two things real quick. As mentioned earlier, the Eagles jersey going to the house. What I love about this, just from a storytelling standpoint, is I think all of us have gone somewhere dressed wrong or dressed inappropriately and just how uncomfortable you feel no matter how nice everyone is about it.
Yeah,
and it immediately made me start rooting for this guy who otherwise could be considered completely unbearable. Because Bradley Cooper's character, in a lot of ways, is just unbearable. But the way they write that they did this movie makes you root for him, as we've all mentioned. I think little things like this, like going, "Oh, that sucks so bad. Like, I feel bad for you. Come on, make it better." You know, and I think that's just one of those little like storytelling things that they do that flips the switch from overbearing to lovable underdog.
And they should be, and Deshaun Jackson should be very excited. They mentioned his name a lot in this movie. And I looked him up. He's still in the NFL. So he's had like quite the long career.
Yeah. Wow. Cause this is 10 years. Wow. Good for him. Yeah. There was something that came up multiple times that I don't think had any bearing in the movie though. And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here. The kid with the camera that kept wanting to record them. Did that play a part in the movie or did I miss something? Cause it felt like he came back twice and then just never came back again. And there was never a payoff for that.
That's true.
Was this the kid when the cops got called and De Niro kind of had some words with him briefly?
Yeah.
I think he's related to somebody in the production, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he comes back in a deleted scene of the final scene. There's like an alternate ending, and I think he's in that, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. There's this one character, and I think it's that same kid.
That sounds right, because I had seen this movie a couple times before, and I remembered that character having something else happen or having another scene, so that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, I kept waiting for him to. I thought something was going to happen where Bradley Cooper did something, and he got recorded, and it came back to haunt him or something, something like that, but then he just never came back. And I was like, oh.
Yeah,
that's maybe true. He was in the book. I don't know. So I just kind of brushed it off because, again, maybe that was like a because when you know, when you read the book and then you see the movie, you get upset when certain characters aren't in it,
right?
Or, you know, and so maybe that was just like I thought, oh, it's just some service to the people who read the book. But in any case, after running into or running by Tiffany the next day, Pat decides to mention Tiffany to his doctor, who tells Pat that maybe Pat should be cool and maybe Pat should try to help Tiffany out. Pat takes Tiffany to a diner and they open up to each other. Tiffany says she'll deliver a letter to Nikki, Pat's ex, and then explains she was fired because she was having sex with everyone in her office. Pat then opens up about his issues, but is condescending to Tiffany, causing her to leave and start another scene. But before Pat can get arrested, Tiffany covers for him and reluctantly agrees to still deliver a letter to Nikki. Andy, I have a quote here. I'm just going to read it and you can take it from there. Sort of like you, hope to God she didn't tell her that.
So mean.
I don't know where this is going. I just thought that was a hilarious, unintentional lie. Because It's so hurtful because you get what he's saying.
Yeah.
But it's also like, don't say that.
As he's eating Raisin Bran.
He's eating Raisin Bran because that would mean it's not a date. You don't eat Raisin Bran on a date.
Can I just say, I love the Raisin Bran choice. I don't know if that's in the book or whose choice that was, but it's so perfect for, you know, I just love the things. You go out to dinner, she's having tea and he's having Raisin Bran. It's just so silly. And I got to give a shout out to, there's like an older woman that plays like the waitress. Mm-hmm. When he's like running out, she says, hold on there, Raisin Bran. I'm like, oh, good for her. She got one line in there and it was a great one.
I love in that scene at the diner too, when, you know, she's opening up to him and telling about how she slept with her whole, you know, her office. And I think he says something like, oh, I'm not going to ask too many questions or about it. Or he tries to be like cool about it, but then he's just into, he just wants to know more. Like the way they played that scene is so funny.
Yeah. His acting during that was great too. Cause like, you could tell he knew he probably shouldn't be asking, but he also couldn't stop himself.
Yeah.
And, what I liked about this though, Tim, is this was like, this is where, as I'm watching this, you can sort of see, this is where you start to go like, okay, there's going to be something between these two. This is how the movie's going to go. But at the same time, they're so volatile together. Like, this is the second time they've been together. This is like, there's a scene happening already. They seem like a powder keg ready to go up. At the same time, I see these two getting together. I really enjoyed this and kind of enjoyed that dynamic. But you take it away and kind of walk me through your thoughts on that.
Well, I love how we're basically being set up on this situation. It's almost like a sitcom. Like, the situation is established in this scene where you see that, you know, he's going to write this letter. She's going to get him the letter. And then, you know, what's going to happen along the way is they're going to fall in love. And it seems like like almost the cliche romantic comedy. But the way it's handled, the way that we experience, you know, moment for moment with these characters from here on is very natural. And it doesn't feel cliched. It doesn't feel like it was written into a 90-minute, bow tie at the end. Like, it's something that feels like it came from a memoir. It's authentic. And I think that shows in the performances and just the way that they go about experiencing each other and interacting with each other and interacting with the families as well, and the little details there, it just makes it elevates it beyond, you know, what you would normally expect from something like this, a romantic comedy.
And I love, she says, what did she say? Calm down, crazy, right? When they're like running together. And her just running with him is just hysterical because he's in his garbage bag. And like, he's like, oh, I finally lost her. And then she's suddenly like there again. their relationship is so like not traditional, but it's like, it super works for me. Like, I just love watching like them kind of just chat back and forth. And I think when we first see like, because she's kind of, he's crazy, she's crazy. But I think that the time where I see it, where you're kind of like, okay, she actually does care for him, is that one scene where at the end of kind of the part you were just talking about, Jack, when you did the summary, is when, you know, he starts kind of freaking out, right? Where there's like, so you guys could probably answer this for me. Is that song really playing, or that's just in his head? Like, it's just in his head, right?
I thought it was really playing.
Oh, it is really playing.
I don't know, though.
You know, I actually asked, because I thought it was really playing, but then I asked myself the same question, and she was like, it's okay, calm down, don't think about the song. And so that's what I was thinking, maybe it was in his head.
That was like, you really saw him, like, really, like, and she was seeing, okay, he's going through something and, like, kind of cares about him, you know? But yeah, I wasn't sure if the song was really there or not. I just felt so bad for him there. All the, like, little kids are like laughing at him and stuff.
I didn't really know much about this movie going into it, except for the trailers I had seen 10 years ago. So I didn't really know what to expect. Honestly, up through this point, I thought that this was a sad movie. Like, it was going to end sad. Mm. And so as I was watching this, I was like, oh, this is going to be such a terrible, like, I get it, but this is such a terrible match. And so, we'll get into the end, obviously, later. But during this, I was like, oh, these two, like, they're trying their best, but this isn't going to work out. You know, yeah. Like, I was kind of building myself up to that, because
you're like, which one's going to die?
Yeah, exactly. Someone's going to die. She's going to lose him, and she's gonna be like, I've already lost someone else in my life. Oh, this is horrible, or whatever the case is. And so as I was watching it, I guess through that lens, this was all, I think, maybe a different perspective, but I was like, I feel so like I was just this movie feels very much like it's going to end as a sad movie, to be totally honest. As I'm
I was just thinking of something too that I just thought as actors had to be so fun to play is when she like says, I'm the slut with a dead husband, and then throws all the stuff off the cafe table.
Yeah,
that has to be fun. And then I was just thinking a couple scenes before that when Bradley Cooper's going nuts about the wedding video that we talked about with Led Zeppelin playing. He's going nuts and throwing stuff and yelling. I'm like, oh, what fun.
Not if you're the person that has to reset the scene when you get the line wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Bradley, you called her Jennifer, not Tiffany. Oh, you got to do it again.
And how about a drinking game every time Bradley Cooper says Nikki?
Oh, you wouldn't make it. You wouldn't make it. We'll continue on. And Pat's dad is angry that Pat's been taking his envelopes, but still wants Pat to stay and watch football, but Pat can't because he has to go deliver his note. While at Tiffany's house, another guy shows up to talk to her, and Pat gets rid of him while Tiffany overhears everything. Tiffany tells Pat she doesn't want to do something for him without getting anything in return, and she'll only deliver the note to Nikki if he enters a dance competition with her. Later, Danny is out of jail again, and Pat's brother shows up and rubs it in that he's doing great and Pat is doing bad. But Pat actually handles it well and says he has nothing but love for his brother. The police show up and let everyone know that Danny wasn't actually allowed to leave, and he's taken back to Baltimore.
Again.
Tim, I love this little running thing about Danny constantly getting out and be like, oh, you caught me again.
Yeah, and it happens a couple of times to where when you see him later on in the film, you're like, are you sure you're supposed to be here? I'm still not – I don't trust you yet. But, yeah, I absolutely loved this portion of the film. The dynamic with Pat and his brother and the big brother, little brother syndrome, and how Pat was kind of, you know, maybe the black sheep in his family by comparison, that – there's some great stuff that came out of that because you can really see that there's love there. They're brothers. They care about each other, but they have just been conditioned since they were children to kind of compete for the love and affection and attention of their parents. So having a dad like De Niro is in this would be pretty difficult. I think, you know, a bookie dad who's OCD crazy, obsessed with sports. I kind of get the sense that it would be impossible to please him or to feel like, you know, this guy's proud of you, despite De Niro putting a lot of layers of pathos and empathy into his performance there. But just to be these brothers, that would have been a tough life growing up.
You lost your house. I just bought a house. You lost your girl. I have a girl. And then De Niro says something like, why don't you stop saying all the things you have? And he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that. Like, what a dick.
Yeah. Like, I guess he didn't mean it. You can tell, like, he was so awkward about it, though. Like, it was, like, at the forefront of his mind where he almost didn't want to say that, and it just vomited out of him, where he's just saying the exact wrong thing. You could see it on the performance. It was great, because he wasn't just doing it to be a dick. He was doing it to try to, like, relieve the tension or address it, but he just made it 10 times worse.
And something that I thought was such a good character development thing as well, and also explained a lot of things to me as the viewer to help me kind of move on in the story. Andy, I want to talk to you about how when Pat explains to Tiffany what a good marriage is and how it's okay for couples to fight and want to change everything about each other and to not talk for weeks at a time. And I thought this was great. It's funny to say, but it's also like, it's great because one, it shows just what a terrible marriage he actually was in, mm-hmm. and why it's good for me, the viewer, for him to not get back with his ex-wife. Because there's a part of me as a viewer who might be like, well, I don't like Tiffany getting close to him because I want him to go back to his true love. But this is the movie's a good way for the movie to very quickly and succinctly go, no, that's not a good marriage, by the way. That's a bad situation.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, at least for me, I wanted him to be with Tiffany, you know, throughout the whole thing, because I want to see chaos.
I love it. That's my... but yeah, I just thought that was a good little nugget to throw in there to just remind us, by the way, even the viewer should not be rooting for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Even if logic would tell you clearly it shouldn't, it didn't end well the first time. But
has Chris Tucker, cause this was like, Chris Tucker was like just in the Rush Hour movies, it seemed. And then was in this.
And then this.
And then have we seen him in anything since this? He's so good.
I was going to say he did a great job in this movie. I don't know why he's not in more movies.
Yeah, this is kind of like a comeback vehicle for him, but I don't think he really turned it into much. I would love to see more of him. I mean, Rush Hour is amazing. Friday movies are amazing. He deserves to be, you know, seen and be doing some things these days.
Yeah. Well, Pat drops the letter off for Nikki and Tiffany with Tiffany as they start to practice dancing. Tiffany talks about what real feeling is and reveals how her husband died and how that is what feeling is as the two start dancing and maybe building some feelings for each other. Danny is out again and he starts to help teach Pat and Tiffany to dance. Back home, Pat's dad confesses he didn't know how to handle Pat's issues when he was younger and now wants to spend time with him and thinks he's good luck. Pat's dad says he's betting everything on the game and wants Pat to go with his brother to the game as extra good luck. Now, there's a lot of layers to this, Tim, but I want to talk about Robert De Niro's performance here because for me, this was my favorite part from him and just him... trying to understand that feeling of like he wanted to do right by his son but now realizes he didn't know how, and that, I thought that was just such a... I'm usually the guy that likes explosions in superhero movies, but this to me was one of the acting moments where I was like, God, that's a heavy moment.
When he's on the bed speaking to Pat, his son, and just telling him about his regrets and what he wanted and his motivation for wanting them to be closer together, I can't imagine a better performance than that. Moment to moment there, De Niro nails it, and that's he does it so well. It's like, oh, that's why he's Robert De Niro. Like, that's why he has this pedigree, this reputation that he's a legend, and he's still got it. And I love to see him doing that at this stage in his career. I think this is one of the highlights of the film and his the later part of his career. But just the beauty of that moment of a father being vulnerable with his son and telling about how he kind of messed up and what he really wants. From what I understand, De Niro kind of gave that to the film. That wasn't in the film that he was going to cry there or anything. He elevated that moment in the story, and then they shot it a couple times because it was so great. That's absolutely one of the standout moments of the film and of the later part of De Niro's career.
Because it's so powerful, but it's not over the top. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. He still feels like the tough Philadelphia dad. You know, he doesn't feel like he's break. He still feels like he's trying to be a tough guy while saying this, but also showing the it was just the razor thin line of he has to walk to.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, to still be the tough bookie dad, but still show a lot of emotion and not go too far either way is just incredible the way he did that.
I was just going to say he's so good, too, because you have that scene. And then like the next scene he's in, he says it's a very quick line, but he says something that he can't go to the games because he's like, you know, I'm banned from the stadium.
Right.
It's just so funny. It's like, here's this nice, vulnerable man. And then he's like, then you're like, oh, yeah, him in an Eagles game. He was probably insane and fighting people and whatnot.
Right. Which they said later he does. But I was going to ask Andy, is it possible that maybe this whole act was an act and he was just trying to get Pat to go to the game with his brother because he really believes in
diabolical
that luck?
I mean, that's very plausible. I don't believe so, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was that way. That scene is so good though, when they're at the football game and then, you know, I mentioned earlier the therapist is there. He's so good, his face is painted. It just reminded me of like Tim had said with like, you know, being in Philadelphia, you know, growing up in Chicago, like going to a Bears game. Yeah, people get insane. Usually we don't even make it to the game because you're just at the tailgate and people are drinking, eating, and, you know, it's chaos. I remember as a kid, I wore a light blue jacket and people thought I was a Lions fan. So they started throwing snowballs at me. I'm like, I'm 5 years old. But it's like that crazy kind of mentality. But being on the same side is great. So I don't know, that part where that one Eagle fan says, you know, some bad shit, you know, I think it's great how they all just jump in. They're like, that's the bad guy. And everybody kind of jumps in and, you know, because Cooper's trying his best not to get in fights. But, you know, when that happens, when your brother's getting in a fight and it's with against the people that should be getting beat up, you know, he's got to jump in.
Well, and that's let's talk about that part, because Tiffany gives Pat a letter that is Nikki's response to his letter. And it's a nice note, but it also says maybe it's best if they live their lives separately. Tiffany says the dance may be the thing that shows he's ready to resume marriage, but Pat promised to go to the game. So at the tailgate, Pat runs into his doctor and then gets into a fight with some other fans. And then Pat is arrested and misses the game and the dancing, and the Eagles lose. And the dad blames him for that. Tiffany comes over and is angry at everyone. And woman explains superstitions and how Pat's dad is wrong about everything, which just causes Pat's dad to bet everything on the Eagles and against the Cowboys, and that Pat and Tiffany would score at least a 5.0 in the dancing competition.
So good.
So much stuff happens here. Tim, this is kind of the all hope is lost moment, is it not?
Yeah, yes, the really, yeah, it's the low point for our protagonist story. And but I love the turn here. I love how there's a bright light at the end of the tunnel, and it's this dance competition, and they just have to make a 5. They really mine a lot of good comedy out of that. There's a great amount of comedy and suspense that comes just from them trying to get a 5 in this dance competition, which I love. And to, not to say the least, actually, the bookie friend, I really like De Niro and his back and forth, and just the idea that these two like really old good friends are having these bets that are gonna like upend each other's lives. Yeah. They just don't care. I love that. I believe it despite it being ridiculous, but you believe that these characters would behave that way, these absolute degenerate gamblers from Philly. But yeah, I love how everything comes together. It feels like almost too much plot being thrown at the story, but it's not. Whatever the secret recipe is here, they've nailed the proportions just perfectly, so that we've got this kind of like ridiculous storyline, yet it feels very natural and real, and we're invested in it. And yeah, I just think it's great. I love it. What other movie has this? A character who has lowest point is his dad thinks that he ruined the Eagles game because he got into a fight there. Like, it's just, it's preposterous.
Sounds like Sunday at my house, but but no, you're right, and I love that you said that it's kind of a preposterous storyline. But the acting and the characters are done so well, I didn't actually question it at all. But I was thinking as we're talking about this, and we recently watched He's Just Not That Into You. And I was thinking, if we watched the same script, but it was filmed in the way He's Just Not That Into You was filmed, I'd be like, this is the dumbest movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, you mean these, I'm going to give your ex a letter if you go to a dance competition with me? What are we talking about here? But the characters are so good and the acting so good. I never actually questioned it. I was like, oh, okay, well, he's going to go to the dance. And it's just, it shows just how important like a well-acted and well-constructed script is, because it took an otherwise completely unbelievable situation and made me just go, oh, okay, I get it. Let's go.
and Hurricane Tiffany comes in and just like just gives it to everyone. It's so good. She's so good in this scene.
Yes.
Because she just goes toe to toe with everyone. And it's so good because everybody has a different stake in this. You know, like Tim said, the bookie friend, he could double his money and then De Niro could lose everything. Jennifer Lawrence, just like the way she's kind of explaining everything, and then when the friend bookie, I wish I knew his name, but he's like, I feel real bad about this, and like there's a part of me for him, I thought he was gonna say like, so you know, forget it, have your money back, we're friends, but she's like, you don't care at all, and then but the only way for it to, he was willing to have the Double or Nothing. It was just funny to me, like, he's a good friend, but like, he won't be like, hey man, don't worry about it. You know, don't, you don't have to pay me. He's like, no, you still got to pay me. In fact, right. Yeah, I'm going to take your Double or Nothing. And then when De Niro starts giving him like, I'll give you 10 points. It's just like, oh my God. And everybody's freaking out. Like, and the mom is so good in that scene too. She's like, what are you doing? You know, everybody's like all in on it. And then them talking about the dancing, you know, adding that to it. It's such a good scene because it all comes organically and all of our characters. I think that's, we kind of enjoyed it so much because we've seen all these characters in all different mm-hmm. scenes. We've seen the therapist and the buddy and the brother and, you know, we're all here. We're all here together now. I think the only one missing was like the Julia Stiles character, you know.
And the doctor wasn't in the house at the end too.
Oh, he wasn't. But, oh, I thought he was.
But that's kind of what I said at the beginning, where it feels like there's a lot more life in this movie than what we got to see was, and again, probably because of the book, but like, I feel like there's a whole character, like there, you could probably dive in and make a whole movie out of the bookie characters, out of just Robert De Niro and the Cowboys fan, you know. I feel like that had a whole thing to it. I felt like the friends, you know, Julia Stiles and friend
Veronica probably, and Ron. Yeah, Veronica and Ron.
they felt like they had so much more to do. By the way, I forgot to mention they got the iPod things in the rooms. That's the first thing I thought was those didn't age well.
Yeah, they got
dongles on all of them now.
Right.
And you mentioned Julia Stiles too. Gotta give her flowers. Like, she was really good in this, and I hadn't seen her in a lot of movies, you know, around this time. So I want to see her in more things. She was really good as the sister.
Yeah, I kind of wish she was in it more.
Was this one of her last big roles? Because she did a lot of the teen stuff, but this was her, I think, kind of aging out of teen stuff. And she was great in this, but I don't know if I've seen her in much after it.
Before this movie, I hadn't seen her in a while. And then I was like, oh, Julia Stiles. But that was 2012. That's 10 years ago. What's she done since? I haven't seen her much since. So I would love to see more.
Do you think she was watching the dance scenes like with her arms crossed? Like,
great point. Yeah, the dance stuff is so fun.
Let's talk about it as we wrap the movie up here. Pat and Tiffany get back to dance practice, and Christmas rolls around, and Tiffany sees Nikki actually did show up, and Tiffany is not happy about it and needs a drink while chatting up a lawyer. Pat also sees Nikki there. Tiffany says Pat is the worst thing that's ever happened to her as they make their way to the dance floor and the music plays. The two dance a bit unorthodox, going between styles, slow, fast, and everything in between. It's not great, but they average a 5.0. And while everyone is confused, they celebrate because they won the bet, not the competition. Pat hugs Tiffany and then leaves her to go talk to Nikki. Nikki says Pat looks good, and Pat whispers something to her. Tiffany runs out of the building, and Pat's dad tells him that Tiffany loves Pat and that Pat needs to go after her. Pat does, and the two run as they have before, and he hands her a letter confessing his love. Life moves on, and the next Sunday rolls around, and everyone is happy. This has about 15 different things I want to talk about. Andy, you've seen a lot of dances, so I want to talk to you about this dance, right? It caught me off guard a bit, but I loved this dance they did because it was, I thought, symbolic of them, where sometimes they're all crazy, fell in love with their girl, you know, like all crazy, and then they're different, and then they're composed, and then they're not, and then they're a bit messy, but they're doing their best. And I thought that this was actually a really nice tribute to the characters they played.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my favorite part of the dance is when she goes for the jump and like, misses and her butt's kind of on his face. They cut to Robert De Niro, and his look on his face is so good. It's kind of like, I don't know about this. But yeah, so good. I agree with you.
And Tim, I want to talk about Robert De Niro again. I just said his favorite, my favorite part of him was that other scene. This was a close second to me when he was saying, look, this is a moment in your life. And for that hit me like really hard as a viewer. Because we do have those moments, and it was interesting to see him telling his son, like, I wasn't there. Maybe I wasn't there for you before, but this is the moment. You have to do something.
I'm right there with you. That was a 1-2 punch, that other scene and this one for De Niro. I mean, he just knocked him out of the park, and it really rang true that just, you know, sometimes there's just moments where you have to act, and you get one shot, one opportunity, mom spaghetti and all that. but it was just another brilliant performance. It really brought that moment, the climax of the film, to a head. And you're worried there in that moment. She just took off. Is Bradley Cooper going to find Jennifer Lawrence? Are they going to actually have the happy ending that they deserve here? They really tease you in that. And you think for a minute that he's going to go back to his ex-wife, but you see by the end of it that he has really become a new person, and he's grown beyond that. And it's just a great, wonderful moment at the end of the film.
This, the idea of him going back to his ex, because I think if this was any other movie, I would have been like, what's he doing? What an idiot. But as I'm watching this, I'm like, this is kind of his character. Like, this fits everything we've said, that he doesn't even realize that Tiffany's great and that he's going to go back to this person that is going to make his life a train wreck, because that's what he's always said he was going to do. And that's, he does what he says, and he says what he does. So it was such a believable thing when he did that. And I think that's also why his dad coming over was so important and actually needed in the film for him to say, like, look, dude, not this time.
He gives him a big hug too.
Yeah,
it's a good father-son movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if my dad would want to watch this movie with me, but I get what you're saying.
I thought it was kind of similar to Little Miss Sunshine, how like it's like this functional family, and she does like the beauty pageant at the end. It kind of had that same kind of feeling to me, where it's like, out of all this dysfunction, you see all these characters that. Funny enough, it reminded me of my family. Like, I could see my family getting really excited about, like, you got a 5, all right, because it's just like, who cares if you actually like win or get like a trophy or whatever? It's like, you went out there, you did your thing, and you performed, and like, you know, like you said, it was this kind of crazy dance, and they just went for it. And I love when they get the 5, there's like the professionals that are like, I'm so sorry. Right. Like, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, they totally played us too, because throughout the competition, you're seeing the judges, they're scoring like a decent score. And then the last lady would give like the lowest score. She was really harsh. And then they just totally flipped it for our characters. So like that's filmmaking for you right there. Just playing with our expectations and having fun with it. So.
Just those little things that, like, I think we take for granted as viewers too, because I bet most people who watch that subconsciously got that, but I don't know if they like internalized it. You know what I mean? Like, there's that little subconscious, like, oh, I got it. But like to be able to write that is incredible, to know that's how the viewers are going to watch it. And there was the part of me that was like, this is a pretty high-end competition. Like, don't you have to qualify to be in this? Did they just let anybody in this thing? But
yeah, that was kind of interesting. Like, I'm like, why are they competing with those people?
Like, actual, like, professionals.
Yeah.
No wonder her ex-husband didn't want to do it. I wouldn't want to do it either. I'd be like, no, they're pros. I don't know what
I was going to say. That'd be like us just, like, throwing the football around and be like, all right, we're going to be in the NFL next weekend. We're going to compete.
You got to go to the combine, Andy, and you got to beat half the players.
There's a great episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that kind of follows that plot.
Oh, really?
It's early. I thought you would have seen it. Sorry.
That's great. Oh, no, I might have. Yeah.
Of course, Tim watched Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. What are the chances?
Well, I thought this was a good one. We'll give our final thoughts. I thought, you know, for me to kind of wrap it up, this was such a delightful ending to me. Like I said, I thought the entire movie, it was going to be a sad ending. And even at the beginning, when Pat is reading the books and he's like, it ends with a happy ending, but then they do one more chapter and it's sad and negative. And I swear, I was like, that is the foreshadow. We're going to get, it's going to look good. And then the very end, we're going to have our hearts ripped out. And so I was waiting the whole time, and we get to the end, and it ends the way it does. And it was just this, like, it was like eating very salty fries the whole time. And then you get that nice, sweet, sugary sip of Coke. If that's how it felt. I was like, this is a very salty thing the whole time. And then I get that nice little, like, that's so refreshing and feels so nice. And I felt like $1 million after this because of the way it went down. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed this movie. I give it a 92%. Tim, you're the guest. You get last words. So Andy, what were your final thoughts on this?
I mean,
one? Wow,
you've described it very well. It's so good. It's so well written, especially like to have like the three quarters of the film have a certain idea. Then all of a sudden it just flips to this whole parlay dancing competition. But it's great. Like, I think if you were to maybe read this, you might go, I don't understand that or something. But it's just,
yeah,
the acting is so good and the writing's so good. So I think everyone was nominated. Jennifer Lawrence won an Oscar for it, and she should have. She was great. So just one of those films where you're just like, everything's kind of checking off all the boxes. Loved it.
Yep. And Tim, well, any final thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think it just really stuck the landing really well. You mentioned how sweet it was. I think it's remarkable how sweet of a film this is without feeling at all saccharine. It doesn't feel artificial or inhuman in any kind of way. It just feels like people on the screen, slice of life, really capturing the characters for what they're doing. And I wish more movies were made like this today. I know David O. Russell has a new film out right now. I think it's called Amsterdam or something like that. Yeah. I might be wrong there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that despite I think it's getting some mixed reviews. I think he's one of the boldest directors that we have right now, and it's worth checking out some of his other films. I mentioned Three Kings and I, Heart Huckabees earlier. Those are two absolutely The Fighter too. I think that string of films is almost unmatched for American directors. I would love for more people to get into his films and for more films like this to be made and released. Sorry, Jack, there's just a few too many Marvel, these big, tentpole films. I like those films. I love them. I do a podcast called That's What G Said, where we review all the Marvel stuff week to week. I like this real human stuff. I like to feel like I'm seeing life reflected back at us and to feel that the insights to humanity that a movie like this can really provide. I would just love to see more of these get made and released in theaters. But perhaps that was a different time.
Yeah, Tim, now you're trying to get to be a miniseries on Netflix. That's the dream.
Right,
theater releases. What is this, 1983? No. What is this, 2015? No. Right. But I think well-deserved high score. This was a good one. This is one of the movies that I'm glad we do a show like this, because I probably never would have seen it had we not been doing this show. And now I did, and I liked it. So good stuff there. Now, Tim, this is where we sit back and let Andy test his skills in a game of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
You already know what's happening.
I feel like this one's a slam dunk, but take it away.
You know it. We've talked about him this whole podcast. Robert De Niro was in Sleepers with Kevin Bacon.
Wham, bam. thank you, ma'am. I feel like you could have connected just about any of the characters to him, though. Julia Stiles has been in so much stuff, and Bradley Cooper has been in so much stuff. And
I think I'd use Bradley Cooper a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, probably. But
it's a deep cast.
It really was. Like, there was a lot of names. I was like, oh, this person. Oh, this person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you could get Chris Tucker to Kevin Bacon, that's the trick.
Oh, yeah, Chris Tucker is in Footloose. No, I'm kidding. You don't remember?
I was like, wait, what? Was he? Was? Well, that does it for us. Our next show is going to go to 2013, where we're going to review Identity Thief, then 2014 Ex Machina, and then 2015's Southpaw. So those are going to be interesting. A lot of this season, we've been zigging and zagging all over the types of movies we're watching. So should be interesting to see those. And that does it for us. But before we go, Tim, where can the world find you and all the stuff you're working on?
You can follow me on Twitter at TimIsNotFunny. You can also find my music project, Ice Cream Fire, that I've done with my wife, on anywhere you stream music. That's Ice Cream Fire.
And Andy Rossi, where can we find you and all the stuff you're working on?
You can find me at Just Andy Rossi.
That's And you can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. That does it for us. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure to like, comment, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will see you next year.